Everyone, Happy New Year from all of us here at the CG Business Advisor. Thanks so much for tuning in to our podcast brought to you by CG Tax Audit and Advisory. What a year we had in 2025, welcoming in an incredible lineup of guests who shared transformative insights on marketing, operations, finance, and leadership. And for this episode, we wanted to look back and pick out some of the conversations that we had that stood out for the actionable wisdom that each delivered. So here's a quick snapshot of what we learned in 2025 from guests like Larry Balin, founder and CEO of Single Throw Marketing, who spoke about AI and optimizing AI discovery. Ross Stockdale, fractional CMO and host of the Thunder Stock Show, who talked to us about podcasting, as well as AI and resilience, learning from his background. Angela Lipovsky joined us as the founder of ARL Elevate and a fractional COO. We talked about change management. And Jennifer Lynn, VP of CPA Partnerships at Source Advisors, taught us about LIFO and tax strategy. Let's hear from these guests a couple of snippets, and I hope you guys enjoy the best of the year in review 2025 right here on the CG Business Advisor. Larry, thanks so much for joining us here. One of the hottest topics that we're going to be talking about is artificial intelligence. I use it all the time in my business, whether it's, you know, coding for my website or whether it's just handling some mundane tasks. We know that AI is completely changing the way that everybody operates on a day-to-day basis. How have you noticed that it has changed customer behavior across every industry that you deal with?
I mean, it's changed tremendously. So we're also a Google partner. We've been working in the AI space for years now. So although it's new to some, it's definitely not new to us, at least optimizing for it. It really had its beginnings, at least in the consumer behavioral change shifting portion of what we're talking about. Back when your Amazon Alexa started to hit the market, Apple Siri, Google Home devices, they weren't called AI at the time. They were called assistive devices. We started working with Google and others around helping businesses to show up or be an option when people would speak to a device. As more and more people were asking questions of a device. That's one of the biggest shifts. People went from statements to questions. They always start searching for a problem, not a solution, because most people don't know what the solution is or they wouldn't be searching. So they search for a problem, but now they're asking questions more than ever. And that's usually when you'll see AI appear in search. Google's AI overview appears 48% of the time when a question is asked or implied. When it isn't asked or implied, no AI overview. It's not necessary. You still use search. But what we're seeing is customers even though there's this contingent, and I'm one of the people that say AI is coming for us all. For every one of us, no matter what we do for a living, it's coming to us all. So, which just means we have to get better, faster, stronger, to your credit, using it as an advantage for our clients, as an advantage for our services, and helping get rid of the mundane things to allow us to be the best we can be faster. But what AI is doing for consumers and businesses is actually creating a more qualified prospect for a business. So when you look at a prompt versus a search in Google is going to be 3 to 5 words on average. A long tail, what we call a long tail, which is more than 3 to 5, is 6, maybe 7 words at most. Most people don't type in War and Peace into Google. It's very quick. And then they get their answers. But in a prompt, in a ChatGPT or Perplexity, a Gemini, what have you, people are writing War and Peace. They're writing paragraphs of information about what they need, what they want, who they are, how it's going to affect them. And then they're getting back a tremendous amount of information in milliseconds in most cases. And what that does is two things. We're seeing consumers find the services they're looking for within that context that's being presented by AI because it's so detailed, it's so rich. It's not one source anymore. And we're seeing when they do click over to the website of that service provider, their conversion rates are a lot higher because they're better suited, they're better connected, they're better qualified. So you're not getting junk leads anymore. You're getting the most qualified person because they're self-qualifying. That's the consumer behavior. They're qualifying themselves using AI. So when they get to you, the closing ratios are six times what they are from search. So people are just getting very good at finding the exact thing they need. And that's a wonderful thing for businesses.
That's awesome. And it completely changes the way that like search engine optimization goes. Like we talk about SEO all the time, and it used to be, and I'm sure still is, where, you know, you're trying to get featured on Google, right? You're trying to make sure that when people search for something, you're one of the top results that comes up.
Yeah, yes. You're a choice.
You want that to be the case. But now with AI, it's like you almost want to be wording things or strategizing so that your company, your services, your website or whatever shows up when people do search in these AI prompts for looking for something.
We're doing more of that than for the last year, at least. We've been doing more of that than anything else. I mean, SEO is and optimizing for AI. So you're a choice. You're what we call sourced, but you're sourced by AI. Your information is sourced by AI. And then AI presents you as a choice, as an answer to a question, a problem, a solution, is SEO. It's just a very advanced version of SEO. We're calling it adaptive, which mm-hmm. just means because real time and in the moment is not fast enough anymore. Like, it's just not. Like, we have to think days, weeks, months ahead, as far ahead as we can of what's going to happen. And AI is able to do that. So it's really about, now it's just about velocity. It's about creating unified signals because change isn't around the corner. It happened yesterday. Change happened yesterday. AI's already on top of it. So from an SEO perspective, what it forces you to do is get very focused, which I think is a great thing for a business. It forces you to get focused because if you think about the difference between AI and a search engine, the search engine is indexing websites within their database. AI is indexing everything. Mm-hmm. It's listening to everything. It's listening to social. It's listening to PR. It's listening to other websites. It's looking at your website. It's looking at the content. It's looking at the velocity in which things change. It's taking the behavior of the searcher, the person looking and prompting AI, the user. It's putting that in there. It's taking so much more information that as a business, if you don't unify your information, if you're saying the sky is blue on my website, and over here you're saying, well, the sky is pink on social, and then over here in PR you're putting out releases, the sky's a little green. AI has no idea what you're all about. It doesn't know what you actually do think. It doesn't know what you're the authority in. Are you the blue sky authority, the green sky authority? Because you're saying so many different things in so many different places, and you're not sure if that even ties into the exact thing that a customer wants. So you also have to be really connected into what's going on in your ecosystem of your business, of your customers right now and tomorrow. I mean, you know, CG, for example, is a perfect example. You know, what was happening in the minds of businesses for taxes yesterday is different than today. Something could happen in the global economy that changes how businesses are looking, what's going to be important to a business when it comes to taxes, when it comes to planning, when it comes to profit. All of those pieces, risk management, it all changes. And if you're saying the same thing, you're saying if you're only talking about the thing that happened 3 weeks ago, you're wildly out of touch and irrelevant. Mm-hmm. You have to stay up on it. And then you have to update everything in what we call the velocity factor as fast as you possibly can. The more you're doing and the more you stay focused and connected to your customer, to the thing your customer wants, the more authoritative AI sees you. And the better your chances of being sourced and being an answer when people ask AI the questions they're asking.
Ross, thanks so much for joining us here. What have you taken from your experience in the fight game, whether it was when you were a fighter, whether it was when you were training, whether it's in your post-fighting career, and now that you've obviously made a successful business career, what lessons have you learned from your experience training and fighting that you've carried over into your businesses?
Two that come to mind instantly. The first is that it's better to be known and different than it is to be the best at anything that you do. So my first ever cage fight, I sold over 100 tickets, which you might, you know, for people that don't have the perspective, for a debut amateur, that's a lot, especially because it was twice as much as the headline fight. So when the very first fight of the night, which was my 0-0, had a full crowd, the promoter was like, what just happened here? Because I, you know, I had a marketing background, so I knew how to market and promote the event. So he, so I think that he, that the promoter loved me because it was a sold out thing, and I sold a lion's share of the tickets. So number one, it's, you know, those who sell and market, like Conor McGregor, part of the reason his bad behavior is the way it is because he made so much money being a marketable, you know, before clip farming was a thing. Number two, I would say that the closest experience that I have to entrepreneurship was not, you know, being on a leadership team of a marketing agency, was not being, you know, in any positions I had in brand side or working for companies. It wasn't even being a real estate agent. It was being a cage fighter, because the amount of stress and 24/7 focus and attention you have to have on your business in order to have the opportunity to be successful, it can only really be, in my frame of experience, likened to what it was like as a cage fighter, because people think that the 25 minutes in the championship fight is the fight. That's the easiest part of being a cage fighter. The hardest part is making weight, not staying injured. The hardest part is selling tickets while getting better at what you do. The hardest part is knowing that on a date and time, it could be millions of people are watching you. And you think about stage fright, people say public speaking is one of the greatest fears. Imagine doing that in your underwear with like dire physical consequences. So the stress management and dedication you need to have as a cage fighter and as an entrepreneur, pretty similar. The stakes are high.
So what's been obviously a big thrill for you is winning that first fight, right? So, I mean, you get a win under your belt in any professional fight, an incredible accomplishment. What has been your biggest business win? Or maybe the one that you celebrated maybe the most, because maybe it was your first one.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I actually want to answer the question about the thing that was the most beneficial was my fight loss. Lost my second fight, I was really bummed out, and my coach just goes, "Hey, guess what? No one cares except for you that you lost. Get over it. Tomorrow's another day, and everyone's gonna forget. So like, this loss has zero impact on your future success." And that's the same for business. Like every time I've taken a business L, it's been like, oh man. And then you just get a business win and you're like, oh wow, that the ability to bounce back, like resilient. But no, my biggest business win, if I had to say, it has been 6 years ago, almost to the date, I had told my mother that I wasn't going to work for anybody again. And she was one of those proponents for so long where she was like, oh, just get a job, play it safe. Like, yeah, keep dreaming. You're young. You're full of dreams. And then she goes, yeah, I believe you. I think you'll make it work. And still to this day, I've been self-employed, whether it's with partners for the first 3 years of my business career. And then the last 3 years has been, you know, by my own, just kind of figured it out. And that's probably my biggest win, is just staying in the game for as long as I've been. I think the first 5 years are the hardest, and I'm going on year 7.
I love it, man. That's impressive stuff. Just want to give, you know, the information out there. So tell everyone about your business, where they can find you, and some of the things that you offer, as well as let's promote the podcast. I want people to find you on social media and wherever they can listen to their podcast, watch on the YouTube, things like that.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah. So you can find me on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn handle is J. Ross Stockdale. I have a website, thunderstockmarketing.com. That's fractional CMO services for small business owners doing anywhere between sub 1 million around there to 40 million. My goal is to, you know, act as the head of marketing, and a lot of small business owners can't afford a full-time CMO, and I try to do it fractionally so it's affordable and help you scale and grow using lessons I've learned from marketing agencies and private equity. And then I have Swim Solutions AI, which is custom marketing AI solutions. Again, you don't have to be a Fortune 500 company to have your own custom AI solution. We can help you out there. And then my podcast is called The Thunderstock Show. You can check it out on YouTube or anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Angela, thanks so much for joining us here on the CG Business Advisor podcast. So you identify these problems, you're creating strategic growth plans for these organizations, but how do you approach the issues? What steps do you take to help all these organizations come up with the effective solutions?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about change management is when you use that big word, change management, people tend to run away from it. They get scared of this big word of change management. But when you think about it from a practical standpoint, think about some of the businesses I've helped most recently. One thing that I've done with a company most recently has been around helping them be more effective in driving the goals that they were trying to drive. And really the biggest problem was they are a small team, less than 10 people. They're trying to make big things happen. And they had good ideas. They have dedicated people, but there was nothing moving forward. The big change they actually needed was the way they were running their meetings. So yes, it's change management. You need a plan. You need to stay focused on what you're doing, all those different things. But it's not big change management like digital innovation initiative. It can be, but it can also be like the little micro small things. There's commonality, at least in my approach, when I think about how to handle those kinds of things. The first most important thing, and the thing that most people in my mind don't start with, is the end in mind. And it sounds basic, but you have to know what you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it. And the why is equally as important as the what. So if you're telling me that you're trying to triple your revenue target, as an example, because you're trying to sell your business in 5 years, that's going to be very different than tripling your revenue target because you have some debt that's going to come due in 2 years, as an example. That plan, how you motivate people around it, what you do next is really going to matter on why you're trying to do that. So start with the end in mind. That's the first thing. The second thing is set realistic but aspirational goals. What does that really mean? I think about this like if I'm trying to plan a road trip. It's summer. It's time for road trips, right? So if you're trying to plan a road trip from New Jersey to California, you generally have a sense of where you're going and how you're going to get there. But if the focus of your road trip is to explore the southern part of the country, you're going to make sure that on that road trip, you're not going through Michigan, as an example. If you're trying to go north, right, like you're going to plan that road trip a little bit differently. And but if I told you you had to go from New Jersey to California and you start going toward Italy, you're definitely in the wrong direction, right? And so the idea behind that aspirational but realistic goals is like, yes, I can drive from here to California. That is realistic. I know generally how I'm going to get there. I know generally the path I want to take, but specifically what I'm going to do on my path there, I don't know that yet, but I'm going to figure it out as I get there.
I love that. That's the second thing. Yeah.
Aspirational and realistic. The third part of it really is around being honest with yourself and the business. So this is around making sure that when you set goals, you're also thinking about where the organization is today and what's working and what's not working. So it's great to think about what goal you want to set, but if Rome is burning, right, you can't actually achieve that going forward. So one of my most favorite things to do here is it's very common to think about what's called a postmortem, right? I'm sure you've kind of thought about that differently, Scott, in your career. So I have this big goal, I have this big initiative, and afterwards I'm going to set a meeting 1 week later or something like that. I'm going to get everybody together. What worked? What didn't work? What did we learn? And how are we going to move forward from here? And then you apply some of those learnings. If you do it well, you apply some of those learnings to a future state. I love doing pre-mortems. I love having that conversation when you're setting the goals at the beginning. So let's really have an honest conversation about what's working today, what's not working today. Why are we doing this? What might go wrong? It helps you set a plan that not only will get you from New Jersey to California, but will help you on the detours around your path to make sure that you actually get there. And the last one is make sure that you hold yourself accountable to this plan that you've set yourself and the organization or the company that you're a part of. So what does that really mean? Oftentimes you invest a ton of time, money, resources, effort in the front end of this process. And then 1 year later, you come back and say, hey, we had this big idea. We wanted to drive this change, but it just didn't happen. When was the last time you had a conversation about it? You look back at the calendar 1 year ago. That's why. Because the way that you drive change is to make it be a consistent drumbeat, part of what you're doing on the day-to-day. And so it doesn't have to be a big formal meeting. If you're having monthly meetings or weekly meetings with your team, you make it a part of that agenda for 5 minutes to check in on the task that you set. At a minimum, you want to make sure that you set goals quarterly and that you, at the end of the quarter, look back at what you said you were going to do that quarter and set new goals for the next quarter, always in service of whatever that bigger goal is in the future state. But really setting that plan and holding yourself accountable to checking in on it is really the way to do it. So for me, it's really those four steps.
Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us. What is all the changes in the business landscape when it comes to the rising costs? How does that affect these businesses and how they navigate going through their inventory for accounting purposes?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it's a really tricky time right now. Recent tariffs that have been imposed by the Trump administration have reintroduced import taxes or even introducing in some cases in many countries on such a wide range of goods. So I know the goal is aimed at bolstering domestic manufacturing, but the tariffs do have side effects and they ripple through the economy. So it really includes price increases across the board for manufacturers, distributors, and retailers, which really, you know, flows down to you and I and everyday business owners. And so it gets really tough to navigate these tricky waters, especially with so many unknowns. But for businesses that rely on global supply chains, tariffs can really lead to spikes in costs at all different phases of product development. It's not just sourcing your raw materials, but you could be assembling here, assembling a component here, sending it overseas where it gets put into a bigger piece of the pie, then that pie gets shipped back here. So sometimes you have goods that are getting hit a couple of different ways depending on the phase of product development that it's in. So this environment really makes it essential for companies to reevaluate your accounting strategies, and it's an opportunity to manage your financial exposure and really try to mitigate the risks of the negative impacts of tariffs and inflation.
So it would make sense that with all these changes, a company would elect to use the LIFO method, the last in, first out method. Are there any specific industries that would benefit more than others when it comes to utilizing LIFO?
That is a great question. Yes. There's definitely some higher inflation in some areas over others. Overall, for 2024, we saw like economy-wise within the producer price indexes, about a 3% inflation rate. And, you know, that's an average. So it varies depending on, you know, what assets we're looking at here. But some of the more inflationary assets for 2024 specifically, because right now we are looking at a 2024 opportunity for a company to potentially elect LIFO, but we're seeing high inflation in aerospace, aviation, wiring and electronic equipment, lumber, metal products, HVAC, coffee, many types of motors and machinery and equipment.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. And we watch this thing. We're really keeping a close eye. Every month, the producer price indexes are released. I know there's a lot of talk if you're tuning into the news when the consumer price indexes come out. Usually the producer price index are shortly behind, but you know, they just we've got inflation, and it's really, again, one of those uncertainties for the year.
Mm-hmm. So what's the difference then between last in, first out, which is LIFO that we talked about, and first in, first out? Like, what's the benefit of using one versus using the other? Because some businesses might choose to do it one way, whether they think that's beneficial to them, or another business might elect to do it a different way. So can you compare the both and just explain which benefit, like what's the difference between the two and really the benefit of using one versus the other?
So they both have their pluses and minuses. LIFO can really help a business reduce tax liability when costs are rising. Whereas FIFO, on the other hand, it provides a more accurate representation of the actual cost of goods sold, but you'll likely pay higher taxes. There are some things that you can consider as key factors depending on, you know, unique business answers. So if you're thinking about, you know, would this be a potentially good opportunity for my company? Or, you know, if you're a CPA listening to this, is this a good opportunity for my client? Well, is this an industry that spikes? So certain industries are really prone to fluctuating costs, like oil and gas. LIFO is a great tax savings tool for oil and gas. In fact, many of the oil companies have been on LIFO since the early 1930s. So they're early adapters. There's been fluctuations in that industry, you know, forever. But stable industries like retail, where you don't necessarily have rising costs for most goods and, you know, inflation is relatively flat, they'll often prefer the simplicity of FIFO. So I would say industry spikes, you know, just where does your product fall in pricing throughout the year? Are there fluctuations? Is it steady? Do you have deflation? Then, you know, that rolls into my second point of price trends. So how are prices right now? Are they rising, falling? Are they steady? That could be, you know, irrelevant and a separate topic than just inflation and tariffs. It could be related to, you know, the trend of your product or, you know, how in demand is it? So that's gonna, there's other factors that drive pricing. But LIFO is definitely the strategy. As prices rise, you really wanna take a look at it. Whereas FIFO is better for deflationary periods or assets. And then certainly not last but not least is financial reporting transparency. So if you're a publicly traded company, FIFO is going to provide a more clear picture on your financial statements, which is essential for investors and stakeholders. So we find that usually public companies are not really interested in electing LIFO. Whereas, you know, if you're a publicly held company, you can have a conversation with your bank, help them understand what LIFO is so that they understand that, you know, it is just a footnote in the financial statement and not a real financial impact, you know, that shareholders would be concerned with.
It certainly was a great year for us here on the podcast, and we hope it was a great year for you out there. From AI optimization to change management, fractional leadership, and tax strategy, this year's guests reminded us that success comes from adaptability, resilience, and leveraging the right tools at the right time. We can't thank you enough for joining us here on the CG Business Advisor, and we look forward to bringing you even more actionable insights in the year ahead. Have a happy, a healthy, and a safe new year from all of us here on the CG Business Advisor. And for more information, you can head to our website, cgteam.com.